again, and welcome to another episode of the Sound of the Kootenays podcast. I'm your host, Al Woodman. Thanks again for tuning in. In this episode, I'm going to be sharing an interview I recorded in June of this year with Nelson's Jesse Lee. He's a multi-talented and multifaceted musician, and we'll learn a little bit more about his life in music as a bass player, guitarist, and we'll hear some music along the way. I'll also be dropping in for another visit with Barry Jones at Sincerity Sound to check out some of the music that he's been working on. And I've been collecting some new music from all over the Kootenays, so we're going to have a listen to some of that as well. By the way, if you're a musician or know a musician that has some recordings or are going to be touring or performing anywhere in the Kootenays, please get in touch. I'd really love to hear from you. You can reach me either through the Sound of the Kootenays Facebook page or the contact link at my website, alwoodman.com. All right, and to kick things off in this episode, I'm going to play a selection of music here by an artist who lives in Grand Forks. His name is Justin Hines, and this is the title track to his album, How We Fly.
We've been down these roads before, it's familiar ground. We're asking for redemption when it's coming back round. But that road is long, and the grind is hard. But if we're gonna be hopeless, then we've gone too far. We'll be fine. Give it time. Oh, and say goodbye to the rivers we've cried. The tides have pulled us through. Just say so long and trouble's long gone. There's nothing more that they can do. And I know we can't be righteous, but I know that we can try. Cause it's not about our time on the ground's about. How we fly. There's a time and a place for love, and a time to cry. You know it by the story of another man's life. And we can shout it out loud, or we can close that door. But as long as we're feeling that we got something worth living for, we'll be okay. We'll find a way. Yeah, we'll say goodbye to the rivers we've cried. The tides have pulled us through. Just say so. Trouble's long gone. There's nothing more that they can do. And I know we can't be righteous, but I know that we can try. Because it's not about our time on the ground, it's about how we fight. Oh, oh yeah, yeah. And I can put it in a letter, or I can tell it in song. But I know that our right begins, oh, at the end of our wrongs. So let's just carry on and say goodbye. The rivers we've cried, the tides have pulled us through. Just say so long, the trouble's long gone. There's nothing more that they can do. And I know we can't be righteous, but I know that we can try. Cause it's not about our time on the ground, it's about how we fly. Oh, 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 said goodbye to
As my family and I were driving home from a recent vacation, we had decided to stop and check out this awesome cafe in Grand Forks called the Boardroom Cafe. This is a place that has a wall with more than 500 board games available to play for a tiny per-person fee of around $5. Now, we had planned to spend some time there playing games and enjoying snacks and teas and coffees, and then I had noticed on the counter there were some books and some CDs for sale. And when I checked them out, I realized that all of the CDs and books were by the same artist, and I knew right away that anyone who has that much recorded material has probably got a pretty interesting story to tell. So it turns out the artist, Justin Hines, is also the co-owner of the cafe. I introduced myself and told him about the podcast, and we agreed to set up an interview very soon. So please stay tuned, subscribe to the podcast, because I'm sure it's going to be a very fascinating story of his journey in music. Next up is some music by Caslow-based artist DM, also known as Donna McLennan. She is releasing her debut album, 10,000 Miracles, this month, and following it up with a tour across BC from the Kootenays through the Okanagan, the Lower Mainland, and onto Vancouver Island. Her music is described as ethereal and grounded chamber folk. DM plays harp and sings vocals, and she is joined on the album and on the tour by Oliver Swain on bass and Ben Johnson on percussion. If you'd like more information about DM and her music, you can check out dm.ca. That's DIEMM.ca. Here now is a taste of some music from the album. This is a song called Moon Pocket.
Take
yes, DM, touring across British Columbia this September. If she's coming to a community near you, you should go out and check out those shows. They're going to be beautiful, I'm sure. DM and I are planning to have a conversation when she gets back from her tour, and I look forward to hearing all about the tour and the album, and hopefully we get to visit her fancy treehouse studio art space. It's part of my new mission that's emerged here with the podcast, to visit people in their creative spaces, partially to make sure that they feel comfortable, and partially for me to come and check out where people get their ideas from and the types of environments that their creativity thrives in. So that's the joys of having a portable studio to do your podcast with. Now, in addition to DM hitting the road this fall, I want to also mention that Cam Penner and John Wood have also recorded a new album called At War With Reason, and they too are hitting the road over the last 3rd of September with shows in Kimberley, Weimar, South Slocan, Roslyn, Caslow, Creston, and another date in Twin Butte, Alberta. I'm hoping to make it out to one of these shows and pick up a new CD, and if we're really lucky, Cam will let me play some of it on the next episode. Also with new music out recently is the Nelson-based electro duo of Intersect. Their new album is called Vibe Setter, and it was released on August the 17th. And according to Facebook, they'll be having an LP release party at Bloom Nightclub in Nelson on October the 5th. So once again, I'd like to put a call out to any and all musicians across the Kootenays who are releasing new music. I'm always looking for new music to highlight on the show, and I would be honored to receive your music and include it in either a feature or in transitions, or maybe we find the new theme song for the Sound of the Kootenays podcast or any of the segments. Please get in touch either through Facebook or my website, alwoodman.com. You might remember, in the first episode of The Sound of the Kootenays, I had a chat with Barry Jones of Sincerity Sound Studios, and Barry mentioned a project that he had recently started with a young singer-songwriter named Jordy Campos. Jordy and I managed to get together on pretty short notice, and I had a chance to ask him how the project was going. Welcome to my mini bedroom studio.
Why, thank you for having me.
I wanted to get you in because I know that you've been doing some work with Barry Jones over at Sincerity Sound. How's that going?
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and it's been a trip, kind of dreamlike trip. For the last several months, I came to him with some songs that I had penned and were kind of in their early stages, and he's helped me kind of take them to a place I never imagined my stuff to be. Yeah, it's been a journey.
So he's acting also in a producer role with you as well?
Definitely, yeah, yeah. He arranged a group of incredible musicians to come together, and songs that I had written and played for a couple years in a certain style, like a folksy sort of song, became like a big pop ballad kind of thing, and the bluesy kind of laid back song became kind of a harder rock feel to it, and every song has kind of undergone its own transformation and its own journey kind of through this experience.
That's a lot of fun as a songwriter, I guess, to watch your babies start to develop and grow into new skin.
Well, this is kind of a new medium for me in general in the arts. I've been singing for a long time, but never wrote my own stuff. I was a slam poet for many years and an actor in musical theater. So to take what came about kind of as an experiment a few years ago to see if I could pick up a guitar and learn it in my kind of early to mid-20s, it's now become something so much more where we have a project that I'm extremely proud of and super stoked to share with the people here in the coming months.
Shortness of breath, barely awake. In the dawn is when it seems to change. Lonely lament, sit here and wail.
It'd be great to have you back at some point.
I'd be honored.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jordy. I appreciate you stopping by. Anything else you'd like to share with us just before you go?
Tentative release date, I think, is November, okay, for the album. And just as a clarification, my birth name is Jordy. I go by G for most people, okay, unless I'm working, in which case my boss has to go by my legal name. But, yeah, G.
G.
Yeah.
There it is.
So it's time now to take a stroll up the Slocan Valley. We're going to check in with Barry Jones here at Sincerity Sound Studios. I love coming to this place, and it's always a pleasure to see Barry sitting at the desk. And now we got him behind the microphone. How's it going, Barry?
Oh, it's going great, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing awesome.
Sweet.
Things sound like they're really rolling along here for the studio. There's a lot of exciting things in the works. Where do we start?
Well, we're you know, things are getting rolling as it's kind of a new venture. So, still trying to find our place and our niche. Working with G Campos, mm-hmm, working on his album. As I think you had interviewed him earlier, regarding the progress of that, and it's just been a great experience. We have a gentleman by the name of Noel Fudge out of New Denver. He's doing the string and horn arrangements on the album right now, and the stuff is just starting to roll in now. And it's just incredible. It's going to add such a unique flair to this music that G's created.
Yeah, and according to my conversation that I had with him earlier, your production skills are playing a major role in this as well.
Yeah, well, I've really been graced with the opportunity to work with G on this music and to, you know, bring it to life for him and as well for myself and for all the people that get to hear it.
And so let's have a listen. Is there something that we could check out from some of the sessions so far, Barry?
Sure. Normally I don't share stuff that isn't quite done yet, but we have a song, Ava's song. It's still awaiting the strings for it and some mixing as well, final mixing. But I'm happy to share a snippet of it. Yeah, just for a little prelude.
Great. So this is G and Ava's song. I think that sounds fantastic so far, and it's not even completed yet. I know that there's more to the recording that's not even present in that version of it.
I'm feeling really excited about having a horn section in here, and as well having a string section come into the studio. Mm-hmm. And to complete these songs. Mm-hmm. Ava's song is going to have some strings towards the end of it that Noel Fudge has arranged, and we're gonna have a section come in here and just bring it to life.
And this is all stuff that has been brought in to help support G's music that he brought as very raw guitar and vocal songs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just been an incredible support surrounding this project. It just shows really the caliber of the songs that people are just coming to support this process, and we're just really excited to share it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it as it gets to that finish point and the release date, which again is looking at coming up in November.
Yeah, that's what we're looking towards. You just never know how things are going to unfold, dealing with a lot of different people and schedules. But you have to set goals, and that's a goal that's in mind.
Great. Sounds good. Let's talk a little bit about the recent call for voice actors by Sincerity Sound. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I've partnered up with a friend of mine, Trevor Mason, out of Winlaw here, and we are auditioning voice over actors for audiobooks. So we're going to be doing recording audiobooks here in the studio. So we need a whole range of talent. We need young and old, deep voices, accents. We just need a nice talent pool that we can draw from for all the different types of books we're going to be producing.
That's super exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, and judging by the response, it looks like there's a lot of people that are very interested in seeing what that's all about.
For sure. Everybody loves to read books.
Yeah, definitely. And audiobooks are a very popular thing, too. I see a lot of people posting and asking for different recommendations for new audiobooks to be listening to. So there's a market there for sure.
Yeah, my kids, they spend good portions of their day listening to audiobooks. So, yeah, it's a very popular thing.
Mine, too. That's right.
There you go.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Barry, for having me over again and telling me more about what's going on here at Sincerity Sound. It's a pleasure to be working alongside you. And on a side note, I certainly appreciate all of your advice and guidance and occasional lending of a piece of gear for me to tackle this project. It's a great help. Thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And hey, Alan, thanks so much for just for coming in here and checking in every month. It really, really means a lot that you're supporting us in this way. And congrats. The podcast is sounding great.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
How to be a person. 1. Find your voice. Know that not all languages contain words. Your voice could be music, it could be dance. It will be what expresses you most sincerely. Your voice is an art. If your heart is broken, make art with the pieces. 2. Remember that you are an artist. Regardless of how constantly the world will try to drive it out of you, or how a real job will try to bury the part of you that communicates your feelings when language fails, you are an artist. Whether it is with food or building robots, you will know your medium the instant you realize how in love you are with what it brings out of you. 3. Apologize. You will not always be right. You will not always be wrong. You will hopefully always be learning. Atonement is a sacrifice of pride. Explanation of why you did what you did or said what you said will not vindicate you. If the cost to heal someone is only your pride, then apologize and be grateful that you received peace at such a bargain. 4. Forgive. realize that some people are still learning. If forgiveness is not possible, then think of everything you have ever wanted to be forgiven for but weren't. Hold that uneasiness in your mind until you feel your desire for absolution becoming a wish. Realize you can grant this wish for others. If you are waiting for forgiveness, be prepared to wait. Be prepared to stand in the path of time and wither. Respect that forgiveness is difficult. Not all trespasses are equal, and not everyone will heal according to your schedule. 5. Accept that farting is funny. Granted, not always appropriate and sometimes unpleasant, but if you cannot laugh, if you are more offended by a fart than by war, famine, political corruption, deforestation, racism, sexism, classism, the wrongfully imprisoned, the treatment of women, the foreclosing on homes while banks' debts are forgiven, if a fart offends you more than any of that, then you are not a person and cannot be helped. Join a cult. Have some Kool-Aid. 6. Know that love is a vulnerability, but not a weakness. Love is the volunteer in you that raises its hand and steps forward without needing to be rewarded. Love is a currency that functions in reverse, because the only way to be wealthy with it is to give more of it away. 7. Don't laugh to fit in. Laughter should be honest. If there is no sincerity in your joy, then your happiness will be a forgery that fools only yourself. 8. Do not fear to be hated, but be cautious towards those inhabited by hate. You will be hated, regardless of who you are, what you say, or what you do. You will be hated for your successes or your failures, for good looks or bad looks, for intelligence or stupidity. Hate is the child of the hater. Nurtured by the beliefs it has fed, you often will have no control over what you are hated for. Know that antipathy becomes the master of its owner. Know that if you are going to be hated regardless of who you are, then be fearless enough to be who you want to be. Hate is no more eloquently articulated than in the poetry of the expression, "Not your fucking problem." 9. Try. The tiniest dream that you try to make happen is worth more than the biggest dream you never attempt. 10. Be savagely thankful and continuously in awe of the power you possess. You are alive. Inside of an endless cosmos with the freedom that shines brightest in the dark. Choices. Your choices belong to you so intimately that they will never leave you. They, unlike the changing nature of love or the failing machinery of our bodies, will never abandon you to time. Good or bad, they will stay always. An antique that shows the future who you were and what you stood for. So know that what you choose to stand for is what will inform you of what you've chosen to stand against. So stand. Let each foot crash land into what you believe and plant them there firmly so they may take root in your convictions. And stand.
That was Shane Coizan and the short story Long and a track called How to Be a Person from their album Debris. Now, if you're wondering why Shane Coizan is being played here on The Sound of the Kootenays, fear not, it's for a good reason. A key member of his band most definitely is from the Kootenays. In there you heard Jesse Lee on bass in the short story Long, which I also wanted to point out, composed all of the music behind Shane's passionate and honest poetry on this album, all save for one track. It's a beautiful work of art, for sure. So I met up with Jesse just this past July, and we settled down into his shed studio, and I asked him about how he got that gig with Shane, and I'll give you a hint. His earliest musical training prepared him for a big step later on. Jesse's not only an in-demand bass player in and around his hometown of Nelson, he's also a guitarist, a composer, songwriter, and a vinyl DJ. Thanks so much for joining me on this podcast adventure.
My pleasure.
All right. So, Jesse, you're one of the most recognizable musicians in Nelson, I would venture to say.
How long have you been living in Nelson?
I grew up in Nelson. Moved here when I was 7, actually.
Yeah. Okay. From whereabouts?
From Vancouver.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Born on the coast?
I was born in Scarborough. My mom was born in Nelson. She left and came back when she had me.
Right.
Well, when I was 7.
Right.
Yeah.
And growing up in Nelson was pretty cool?
Yeah. I mean, I was really eager to get out and go to the big city, which was Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then as soon as I was there, I was pretty eager to come back.
What did you miss about Nelson when you were away?
Maybe just the familiarity. I don't know. I mean, I loved Victoria a lot.
And did you go there for school or to just go and venture into the world?
No, I went to UVic for classical guitar.
For music.
Yeah.
So how long has music been this thing that's kind of been driving you?
I guess the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
was it, did you grow up in a musical environment?
Yeah. Well, my grandmother, played violin and she got me playing violin when I was 7. That was my first instrument.
Okay.
And, yeah, she was very concerned with, making sure I could play an instrument, I guess. Mm. And at the time I mean, violin's not very cool. You know what I mean? To a 7-year-old, 8-year-old.
Yeah.
So at the time I was sort of not super stoked on that. I quit after 4 years.
That's a good run.
Yeah. It was like just about enough time to get good. Violin's really hard. And I was sort of like just getting there and then I stopped.
Hmm.
And then I did, yeah, then I took a few years off. So I guess there was a period in there where I sort of like wasn't, you know, thinking I'd play music for money or anything like that. Until, I guess 14. Started playing guitar when I was 14.
Right.
Yeah.
At 14, you discovered the guitar. Was there something that drew you to that? I'm guessing, you know, 14 years old, guitar is pretty cool. There must have been some influences or something that you saw in pop culture or music elsewhere that made you go, yeah, guitar.
Well, yeah. So I was going to the Kamloops Interior Summer School of Music, and I was playing the oboe for some reason. It's a 3-week summer school. Mm. And yeah, my cousin went, so I wanted to go because she was going. And they were like, well, you have to pick an instrument. So for some reason, I wanted to play the bassoon, but they didn't have one. So I played the oboe. I don't know why I wanted to play the bassoon. No idea. Okay, so then I was playing the oboe. And in the house where I was staying, the guitar teacher was staying at the same place.
Mm.
Stephen Boswell. And it's like classical guitar. And I just thought he was really cool and I liked, you know, what he was doing. So then the next year I came back and switched to guitar.
Right.
So that's how that happened.
Right. And that obviously kept going. So when you come back to Nelson, are you enrolled in lessons and continuing to learn or are you just kind of figuring it out on your own?
Yeah. A little both. But yeah, I had a couple of teachers in Nelson, but there was a year, when, my mom got married and we were going to sell our house in Nelson and move in with Ted. And then we were all going to go to New Zealand once the house sold. And so you take a semester off school.
Yeah.
Cause we were going to sell the house immediately and fly to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And the house didn't sell, didn't end up selling. So we never went, but meanwhile, I didn't have school, and so I played guitar for like 8 hours a day for 4 months, which was a very good way to pick it up. I had like, I had a Beatles songbook, and I had a Simon and Garfunkel book, and then some classical, like the conservatory books up to grade five or something.
Right.
And yeah, that's how I did it. That was before I had a teacher in town, in Nelson.
So that was like a homeschool semester.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
And you just dove into it and...
Yeah.
And stuck with it.
Yeah, I just... Yeah, it really worked for me, I guess.
I miss that. I miss having those, you know, those long days that you could just dedicate to that one thing that you were passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could go back. If I could spend my time playing more guitar, I would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did, you're off to Victoria and you study, how did you do a full, like a full degree?
I dropped out after 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would have been a 4-year program then?
Yes. I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And after 2 years, it was time to come back to Nelson.
Well, no, after 2 years, it was time to not be in school anymore.
Hmm.
But I stayed in Victoria for what did I do? Oh man, it's all such a blur. I did come back to Nelson for like a summer and a winter. Is that right? Yeah. And then back to Victoria. And then met my wife and, we got pregnant, had a baby, and then we moved back here.
Right. Right. Your family's still here? Mm-hmm. Your mom's still here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then coming back here, and when did the bass become part of what you were pursuing?
So my wife always wanted to play bass. She bought a package from Eddie Music where you get the bass and the little practice amp and like a patch cord and a beginner book.
Yeah.
I think that was everything for like $400.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think she took a couple lessons, but it was just sitting there. And then one day I was at Oso Negro and I overheard Brian Rosen talking to someone about how he was putting a band together and he had everyone he needed except a bass player. And I was like, oh, I play bass, which was not true.
Some prosperity, hope for the children so they got to be free, peace for the people so we live in unity, let the love flow between you and me, show me what it is to be and what am I to do, just wait patiently, make sure I live a truth, got to live a truth, then go on and choose yourself a choice.
I don't know why I did that, but for some reason, yeah. Anyway, so, and we had like some rehearsals, and I don't know, I feel like the bass suits my personality, like that function, its role in a band.
It's very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a whole different mindset. I know as a guitar player, I'll pick up the bass and my initial approach is to play a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what the music needs a bass to do necessarily. And so it's fun to find that other space in your brain that dictates how you're supposed to approach the music.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have either, but I mean, it's very supportive. You're like really... mostly you're sort of unsung as a bass player and you're just like trying to not clutter things up and just provide a foundation for everything else in the band.
Right. Because it's not about you.
No, I mean, yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's about the singer or whoever's, you know, the sort of front of the band.
Right.
Usually.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, Was the Brian Rosen Project your first band?
Mm-hmm. No.
No?
No, my first band was a punk band in Victoria. I played guitar.
Yeah.
And we got shut down by the cops after one show.
and that was it for that band.
Really?
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to push their limits after that?
I don't know. We all just... I don't know what happened with that. There was the leader of that band was sort of tough to take, and our first show wasn't the sort of triumph we all, I guess, hoped it was going to be, and so just lost interest.
Right. What was it called?
The Sunshine Kids.
The Sunshine, very punk.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah.
So, moving over to writing music then, you write your own music and you kind of do a variety of different styles of music. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of touch on some of the other alter egos in a little bit. How do you approach original music?
It just depends on sort of what I'm listening to at the time, I guess. I used to record an album every winter to give to people as presents.
Right.
And I did that for like 10 years in a row or something like that.
Cool.
And then it's been 4 years since I've done that. I've been sort of focusing on playing gigs. So I'm a little bit like, I feel sort of distant from that muse or whatever.
Mm.
So I'm drawing a bit of a blank. I did an album of like hip hop beats because I was super into hip hop during that period. I did an album that's all just instrumental guitar. The one you were talking about, which is kind of like beats and synths and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where my head is at lately.
Yeah. Is that the most recent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's 4 years ago. That's another thing. When I was making these recordings, a lot of I would write guitar music that was too hard for me to play. And then I'd have to get good enough to play it. That was another like handy thing about making those recordings.
Sure. Yeah. One of those approaches that really pushed you to mm-hmm. to be better.
Yeah.
So we've got guitar, and then we've got bass, and now we're talking keyboards and synthesizers and things like that. You feel pretty comfortable on those instruments as well?
Well, I wouldn't feel comfortable like playing keyboard in a band for money in front of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you're recording, you can fix mistakes and get, you know, you can nail it. I never had piano lessons.
Right.
I really wish I had, actually. So I'm not like a whiz on the keyboard, but not that the keyboard is easy. It's not what I'm trying to say, but it's like, they're all like, you look at a piano, all the notes are there. You can't like, you press the C down and it makes a C, and you can't like screw that up.
Yeah.
Whereas even just playing a guitar, you know, you can, your finger can be too close to the fret or whatever. Like, in that way, playing the keyboard is more straightforward.
Right.
And so, So recording with it is, I feel like almost anyone could do that.
Right. And like you said, with recording, you can piece it together one note at a time if you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I read an article where that's something that actually John Mayer does in his recordings. He'll play piano, but he'll spend hours working out parts and trying to get them right, and probably be cheaper to just bring somebody in to do it.
But sure, yeah.
I think he's a bit of a control guy when it comes to his music.
Yeah. I was going to say, and I mean, obviously he plays guitar better than the keyboard, and I feel the same way. Like there's less between the idea inside and it coming out when I do it through a guitar, when I do it through a keyboard, or I guess anything else.
Because of practice and time spent.
Yeah.
That space between what's going on in your head and what you can produce with your instrument, describe that. What I know what it's like to, you know, quote unquote, lose yourself in the moment of playing music. And I think that's a moment that a lot of musicians chase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's the moment that we're shooting for, is when we're not thinking about the music anymore. What's that like for you?
I've had this gig at the Library Lounge for a year and a half or whatever it's been. I play classical guitar, but I play like these wacky covers. And that has been really good. Like that, just to have it every week. Well, now it's every 2 weeks, but for a while it was every week, and wanted to keep it fresh. So learning new material. I feel like now I'm very good at like, if I know a song well enough to have it well enough to be able to play it in my head, then I can play it on guitar.
That's cool.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like it's like entertaining for people. Keeps it fun. Like I'm never dragging my feet going into that gig. It's a really fun one. Mm-hmm. Satisfying. Yeah. And when you're able to, imagine, or you know, hear in your head what you want, and you know your instrument well enough that you can execute that without fumbling.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, yeah, and it keeps growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then you can hear more tricky stuff in your head.
Yeah,
trickier than you can pull off. I think you can probably always hear more than you can do, or hopefully.
Anyways. Do you think that as your ability to do grows, your ability to hear also grows?
Yeah, I think so. Or I guess I hope so.
What genres do you feel most comfortable playing in?
I really like funk. I like playing funk bass.
Mm-hmm.
I like it all, though, man. I know that sounds trite, but it's true. Like, I really, if I'm playing with someone who feels what they're doing, and I'm able to help by playing bass, I'm like really happy.
Yeah.
And you know, country music, I mean, everyone likes to, can I swear?
Sure.
Everyone likes to shit on country music.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's, if you're playing it with someone and the audience is digging it and this person you're playing with is digging it, you can't help but dig it.
Yeah.
Or I can't.
For sure. I mean, that's drive to connect.
Yes.
With your audience. And, yeah. If, you know, there's bands that I would never, you know, find myself listening to, that they're connecting with an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And there's value in that on whatever level they're connecting at.
I went to the Royal the other night, just kind of popped my head in. It was like a metal show, three metal bands on tour.
Yeah.
And metal is definitely not my cup of tea. But I stayed for a song because, like, the crowd was into it and, you know, the band was, like, really giving her.
Yeah.
And it was, like, it was a nice little scene.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
And you could appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah.
As somebody who plays
music, and they're playing music, and I'm like, they're doing it well. They're. And everyone in here is doing what they're supposed to. Like, the audience is giving energy to them, and you know, the guitarist is like wailing and drummer's going real fast, and it was like just perfect.
Do you get out to see many shows?
Not as much as I should. I was thinking about this the other day. I feel like, because I play a lot, and then if I'm not playing, I kind of just want to be home. I feel like I'm not as supportive of the scene as I could be, unfortunately.
How does living in Nelson affect your music career? What effect has it had?
The quality of musicianship is very high in Nelson. But I guess, you know, I spent September 2 years ago in Victoria. I played a couple festivals on either side, and then I just stayed in the middle and played restaurants and stuff like that. And, definitely I don't stand out as much there as I do here. So there's just like tons of super good bass players and guitarists and stuff.
Right.
So like that's an effect. I think probably Nelson is small and we have a pretty good music school here, pumping out graduates who all want to stay here because it's so nice here.
Yeah.
I think that can't help but drive the price down.
The price of?
Like how much a gig will pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably another effect as well.
And music is your living,
mm-hmm.
professional musician.
Mm-hmm.
There are only so many venues and so many gigs in town.
Yeah.
Is it a struggle?
Well, first of all, my wife's a nurse. So I'll have like a really good month followed by a really bad month. And luckily she has like an even paycheck.
So you know the rent's going to get paid.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's more actually like the summer is like, I'm really busy in the summer and make my money for the year kind of like in the summer.
Yeah.
Nelson
isn't the only place you get to play though.
No,
you do get to travel around and, you've got, some other pretty cool gigs, playing with, are you still playing with Shane Koizan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's that going? How long have you been doing that?
6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you told me the story of how that came about. And it sounded strangely similar to how the gig with Brian Rosen came about. Is that a trend? Do you kind of put yourself into situations that, you have to tread water and figure it out?
So no, I don't. I have done that 3 times, and done that kind of like crazy jump in without looking first thing basically 3 times in my life, and they've all been music related. But no, that's not like a way that I live my life or anything.
Right.
Like, I'm not brave in that way usually.
Right.
With Shane, it was just, I had to go audition, and they said like, oh, do you play with a bow on your upright bass? And I said, yeah. And I didn't even have a bow, so I had to like borrow one and figure it out. I mean, luckily I'd played violin, so I understood the sort of mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed up with a bow and could sort of bow. And I told them, like, I only got this bow a week ago, so I'll get better, I promise, kind of thing.
And they've been pretty open, obviously, 7 years later. There was no hesitation. You just learned the songs and off you went.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. I mean, I think they had a few people audition. I think the reason I got the gig is because after the audition, we went to a restaurant and we got free dessert. And I said, this is very auspicious. which, you know, maybe it was. And I think that free dessert got me the gig.
Tell me about one of your favorite gigs. I know you've probably got hundreds under your belt.
Like specific shows I can remember?
Yeah, maybe like a, you know, one show that really stood out for you, good or bad, you know. I'm sure I'd be curious to hear of how a gig didn't go the way you maybe wanted it to as well. But what would be one of your favorite memories of playing a show?
I mean, there's been some sort of like big audiences. That's always fun. Or like open for the Wailers. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, small shows have a special something about them too. House concerts. I really love playing house concerts.
Hmm.
I can't remember a bad one. I can't think of like a really good one. Hmm. The bad one was a house concert where there was two of us on stage and there were two audience members. That was in Victoria. And we did the show anyways. I think there's a mix-up with the venue or something. But that's what we were told. Anyways. So the audience was the same size as the band.
Right. It must have been a little more interactive than usual.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I remember one of them was my cousin. And then one was like a guy who subscribed to this series. And I played this medley of 90s TV theme songs, and when I finished, he was like, "Yeah, I never really watched TV." So it all, you know, the sort of cleverness of it or whatever went right over his, or he didn't appreciate it. It wasn't nostalgic for him,
right?
It just was music.
Let's jump over into a completely different area and let's talk about Rafferty Funksmith. How long have you been doing that?
My first DJ gig was on my 25th birthday, and that's the third jump in without looking thing I did. I've been collecting records for a while, and then like a friend had a store in the alley, and she wanted to have a party there, and she wanted a DJ, and she knew that she liked my records. She said, like, "Well, can you DJ?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so, same thing. So then, yeah, I borrowed turntables and a mixer. I, like, figured out how to set them up that day, like, at the venue. Figured out how the mixer works with the, you know, the queuing and everything. Like, I knew intellectually how that all functioned.
Yeah.
But I'd never done it before. Tried to beat match, which, you know, that takes practice. So I wasn't successful at that. But I had a dance floor and stuff. It was pretty fun. Very satisfying.
Yeah. And you're just picking your favorite grooves off of, out of your own record collection.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
I mean, a DJ's job is to make a dance floor happy. So however they do that, I feel like is, I'm not judging people who don't play vinyl records.
Sure.
I mean, essentially, isn't it the same job as you know, Leonard Cohen or whoever, or you or I playing guitars? Like, you just want to be appropriate for the space you're in and the audience that you have.
Mm-hmm. You had a project a while ago, and maybe you still do, Lint, a jam band, I think you would have described it as, funk.
I guess. I suppose it's pretty jammy.
How would you describe it, I guess?
I mean, I would always call it a funk band. But we did have big like sections where we'd jam, but they were all sort of written in to, you know, this is the part where we jam and then this is how we get out of the jam. So come back to the written material.
Right.
So I guess, but those parts could go on for a really long time. So
for sure,
I guess it was kind of a jam funk band.
Those are fun. Those moments when you can leave the form and go off and be creative as a band with an audience.
Yeah. And especially if you have the sort of scaffolding of knowing how you're going to get out of it and stuff. Yeah. Not that that's necessary, but that is, it is helpful, and it's, you know, it's, you can be confident when you have that.
Thank you.
I'd like to touch on the 2015 Kootenai Music Awards. You were the Artist of the Year that year. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was nice to... It was surprising. I don't remember who else was up for... Oh, Shred Kelly was. I don't remember who else, though. Yeah, I don't know. It was very nice and gratifying.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know from the outside, as an observer, I was aware that you were doing many things musically, mm-hmm. Playing bass and playing guitar and doing the DJing. It didn't really come as a surprise to me to see that award. And you know, from a naive perspective, it seemed fitting. So I didn't assume that there was any sort of voting or that it had that it wasn't sort of a consensus in agreement that the Academy had decided that you were deserving of it that year.
Yeah, I have the trophy. Is that what it's called? Trophy? in the house somewhere. I'm gonna be honest, I was super happy when that happened. Like,
yeah,
it was very, very nice. I felt like supported and appreciated by the community, people who go to shows. It's just nice to have that reminder. Artists, even if they're creating art that people are consuming and really enjoying, they don't always, people forget to say like, "Hey, I'm enjoying this art you're creating." And it's just, it's easy to forget to say that. And I don't know if artists maybe need that. Certainly some do, and it's very nice to get like a reflection or someone saying like, "Thank you for making this art. Please keep doing it, and we love it and we appreciate it."
Yeah,
and it helps us.
So this seems like a good time to interrupt the interview and express my gratitude. I'd like to thank all of the artists who have told me that doing this podcast was a really good idea. I'm having a lot of fun doing it, and it really is my pleasure to offer to support them in whatever way I can through the podcast. I think it's also important to note, when Jesse talked about being unable to get out and support the scene as much as he liked, I shared that sentiment. I live rurally, and that makes traveling into town to see shows sometimes more difficult than it should be. So this is my way of trying to give back, trying to show support and encourage the music scene in our area. And I appreciate all the support that people are giving me to do this. It truly is my pleasure. And now back to our interview. What's something that people would be surprised to learn about you?
I never practice. It's probably, I think, I used to, but I just don't anymore. And I probably should, but I just play instead, like I gig instead of practice, which is pretty weak. I realize that's weak, but it is what it is.
But maybe at a certain point, you know your ability and you've walked into enough situations and been able to live up to the expectations of the gig based on your ability that you've honed over the last how many years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, if I practiced, I'd be even better, you know?
Yeah.
I would be. And I've been playing jazz lately with Rich Rabnett, and that's really hard. And I know that, and I mean, upright bass is hard before you start playing jazz on it. It's like, it doesn't have any frets. Mm-hmm. Intonation is really hard. And speed is really hard on that instrument. And I could address all of that stuff by practicing, you know, and I really should, and I know I should, and I talk about it a lot. Yeah, but I just don't do it.
Don't have the time for it. Don't have the inclination.
Well, I mean, there's time. It's inclination. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's time to practice. I mean, I will say this. I have a folding bass. Have you seen it?
I did see it.
Yeah. Super cool, right? But it means that my bass is not just sitting there on a stand. It's like folded up and put away.
Mm-hmm.
So to play it, I have to get it out and assemble it. And after you assemble it, you kind of have to wait 10 or 15 minutes for it to sort of settle.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a little bit of a drag. And I think also the setting up, tearing down process is a bit hard on it, like a little bit.
Mm.
I want to minimize doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So the result is I don't play bass at home pretty much ever.
Right.
Yeah.
A little bit of guitar?
Yeah. I mean, the guitars are there. They're on stands.
Right.
I can pick it up and play it.
Right.
Yeah.
Any violin?
I go through sort of fits and starts. I actually got paid to play violin in the early spring, I guess, February or something. My first professional violin gig. I was like a background. It was for a murder mystery at the Hume
Hotel. Oh, yeah.
And everyone was dressed up, and so I was like dressed up too, and I just sort of played in the background. It wasn't a show.
Yeah.
It was just background stuff, and I kind of strolled among everyone, just playing stuff, mostly making it up, but I had like the Suzuki Method book on a stand. I'd like kind of go over and remind myself, and yeah, so violin, yeah, comes and goes. My son went to the Waldorf school, and every May they would do a maypole dance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would I'd play violin for that. Did that like 6 or 7 years, 5 or 6 years in a row. But I mean, violin's super hard. So it's that's when you definitely need to practice.
Yeah.
And as I said, I'm not much of a practicer, so I that one for now is like not really. I certainly wouldn't want to charge money for it, except I did in February.
Yeah.
But that was background, right?
They offered.
They did.
If you could go back and change anything or do anything different, what would you do differently?
I mean, I guess I'd... my mom asked if I wanted piano lessons, and I said no. I guess I would say yes. That was when I was like 9 or 10.
Just kind of as we close here, what's your take on the Nelson music scene? What's your favorite part of it?
We have some good rooms in town, which is nice, and we have just a lot of quality talent. There's a lot of really good DJs too here, all different, whatever floats your boat you can find. Yeah, I guess, I mean, you know, we're lucky at the music school too, so there's that energy. Mm-hmm. Of like really keen and excited.
Mm-hmm.
Younger people. It's nice to have them around. I think you could go any night of the week and find live music.
What's it missing, or what would you change if you could wave a magic wand in the Nelson music scene? If there was something like, oh, Nelson could really use a festival at Lakeside Park every summer, or...
Well, that's a great idea. It's shocking that Nelson doesn't have a festival.
Mm-hmm.
There was one. I think the last time we did a festival was in like 1991 or something.
Wow.
Sarah McLachlan played. And that was at Lakeside. Yeah, it is pretty surprising. I know Paul Hinrichs, who you spoke to. I know like a couple years ago he was sort of looking into it, and I guess it's very, you know, they don't make it easy.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine the kind of logistical nightmare that would be to create a festival of nothing. Like,
right.
Yeah. You know, find a spot for it, and where is everyone going to park, and bathrooms, and power, and oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
Not me.
Call me if you need a guitar
player. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'd like to say thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on and helping as we try and shine a little bit of a light on the Nelson music scene. And I certainly wish you all the best, and I look forward to seeing you at many venues in the future.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Well, it was a real pleasure to sit down with Jesse that day and catch up a little bit, get to know where he's been and what he's been through a little bit more, and be able to share that here with you on Sound of the Kootenays. I'm not done playing music, though. This next group is a band from New Denver. They were a three-piece band, and although they don't actively gig and pursue music together so much anymore, when they get the chance, they do get together. And I had a chance to catch them at a birthday party up in New Denver, and they sounded really great, playing a late night set of old original music. This is a band called Shades of Loud. We'll be right back.
a scale, a ton of deception, politic, pirate, a green greed, the color of a dollar bill. Willful damages, live a lie and feed it to the public. Found out evidence, a new shoes from us to you. Gonna get it up with concrete, concrete. Gonna fill 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 it up and fill it up and fill it up. Gonna fill it up, fill it up, fill it up. Gonna fill it up, fill it up, fill it up. Gonna fill it up, fill it up.
Yes, that was Shades of Loud with a song called Concrete. That's a song that they included on their self-titled album they released in 2012. There's 10 tracks on there. I'm not sure why I'm telling you that, because I have it on authority that I may have received the last copy on loan to use on the podcast. So not sure if you can even find much out about them online, but you have now got my podcast to re-listen to the song Concrete by Shades of Loud going forward. Anyway, it was really fun to see them again over the summer at an outdoor party. Unfortunate that the smoke was so thick in the air, but I think everybody just decided to deal with it for the evening of multiple live music acts at that party. It was a really good time. And now we've reached the end of this episode of the podcast. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for supporting me to pull this off. I'd like to give another shout out to Barry Jones at Sincerity Sound Studios. Look forward to checking in again with him for our next episode. And I'd also like to thank Jesse Lee again for his time and hospitality. During Jesse's interview, we heard music by Shane Koizan and the Short Story Long, Brian Rosen and the What Now, an original piece by Jesse Lee, and some live music by Lint. I would like to throw out some thanks as well to DM, G, and Justin Hines for sharing their music with me to include on the podcast, and also make note that there was some original music of my own weaved in there, as well as a collaborative piece that I did with Barry Jones. You can find links to as much of this music as there are links available for in the show notes at alwoodman.com. And if you're listening via iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or CastBox, or some other source, please subscribe, leave a comment and a rating, and let me know you're out there.
I'm Al Woodman. Until next time, stay tuned.